Good morning. It is 6 minutes past 9 o'clock, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, and I'm here today filling in for Kathleen Dunn. This hour, a discussion of economists and their role in the current economic crisis facing the country and the world. Our guest this hour is Harvard University Professor of Government Harvey Mansfield, whose article published in the Weekly Standard earlier this week argues in part that a much deeper look needs to be taken at the role that economists have played in the current economic crisis, and he says that, at least in part, it was their mathematical models, their advice, in other words, that got the economy and us to this point. What are your thoughts? Certainly there seems to be plenty of blame to go around, and there are plenty of fingers pointing in plenty of directions these days. But is our guest correct? Should we be taking a longer look at the role of economics and economists? If we've got some economists in the audience this morning, it'd be great to hear from you. We're in our Madison studios today, and our toll-free number is 800-642-1234. You can also join in by using our email, and that address is talk@wpr.org. Harvey Mansfield, good morning. Welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Good morning to you, Gene.
Well, it is great to have you along, and the article is very interesting. And let's start with the basic question of where the economists have been in all these discussions about the economy. Why do you say that they have escaped notice?
Well, I don't think that they've been attacked or even much criticized in the present crisis, even though I think they bear some responsibility. The title of the article is A Question for Economists. And so the first question that I have is, should we consumers or citizens spend our money or save it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Larry Summers, who is the president's economic advisor, whom I happen to know because we were both at Harvard, is working up a stimulus program to stimulate consumer buying. But when he goes home to his wife, Mrs. Summers, whom I also know, will he say to her, let's go out and buy something? Well, yeah, he's got a lot of money, but most people don't, and they may... people now may be in risk of losing their jobs, and so it might be wiser to save. So which would an economist say that we ought to do? And so that's the first question. And I think most economists would say, well, it's not our business to advise. We just predict. And we don't... tell you how to live. We're much more modest than that. We just analyze and look at the economy and say where it's going. But what if your predictions have been so bad that they failed to predict the crash that we've had, in which the stock market has lost almost half its value? Wasn't that a bad prediction? And didn't it constitute bad advice? So that's how I get started. And with that, I try to criticize the idea of prediction. Mm-hmm. Because it seems to me that when scientists predict, they put the authority of science behind their predictions. And if the predictions are bad, they ought to answer for it. There should be some responsibility and some questioning of whether it's so good to make people feel so confident when it turns out, at least in crises like this, that there is no basis for the confidence.
Now, why is it, do you suppose, that economists haven't received what you see as their share of the blame? I mean, you talk about the way they sort of oftentimes defer the question. Well, we give advice. We're not,
yeah.
But we don't tell you what to do. We give you the facts, and then you decide, that sort of thing. But why haven't people, in your estimation, sort of seen through that to this point?
I don't know exactly, and maybe somebody can help me out on that. I think there is a great deal of prestige in science, and it's difficult to understand or to be an economist. So those people have a certain immunity from public inspection, and they justify it, as you say, by saying, "Oh, it's not our business to advise; we only predict."
And there's also the challenge, too. I think that if you are a layperson, and say, for example, you take 10 economists and put them in a room and ask them what's going to happen in 6 months, I can almost guarantee 9 or 10 different answers.
That's right. And President Truman also made that famous statement about he was looking for a one-armed or one-handed economist, somebody who wouldn't say on the other hand and always hedge his bets, which is, of course, a good economic thing to do. Hedge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You spread the risk. But when you hedge or when you spread the risk, you still give people confidence that they're in charge of the problem or that the advice that you've given is wise. And so that when it doesn't turn out that way, don't you have to face the music?
And at one point in your article, we were talking about sort of who to blame here and arguing that economists share part of the blame. But at one point in the article, you say, let's set aside the blame, and then you take a look at how economists actually do advise us. And you talked about that a bit before in terms of their scientists, they're highly educated, they know an awful lot of things. Even though the economists themselves, at least in public, don't say they don't see it that way, that they're not offering us advice.
Well, in fact, I think they are, because with their predictions, they're saying that they know where the economy is going. And if you can't simply predict and then say that I didn't mean for you to believe me. So their predictions give people confidence, which is, I think, in truth, overconfidence in the science of economics. And therefore, I think economists need to be more moderate, more restrained in their appreciation for their own science. And not use this false modesty, which says, "I was just telling what's going to happen. I wasn't telling you to listen to me and to act on it." But you are. So you, when you predict, make a business of prediction, you are taking responsibility for the accuracy in the prediction that you make. So I think they do need to re-examine the whole idea of a science which is given to predicting.
Is it really false modesty, do you think, or just a reluctance to take responsibility?
Well, those come down to the same thing. When I say false modesty, I mean not as modest as they say they are. So they're actually asking you to believe in them, but saying that it doesn't matter whether you believe in them, I don't think that's really a tenable position.
You mentioned the overconfidence issue, and I want you to speak to that a bit because it's an interesting concept. And you also point out in your article that this idea of overconfidence is what secretly unites both liberals and conservatives. And I'm wondering if you could tie that up for our audience.
Yes, I'm not just blaming, I'm a conservative myself, but I'm not just blaming liberal economists. I think also conservative economists do the same. If economics were really pure science, it doesn't seem that there would be a difference between liberal and conservative economists, that everybody would just be an economist, and whatever your science told you to do or to believe, then that would be it, and whether you were liberal or conservative wouldn't matter. But we know that isn't so, and I think it's also the case in the moral question or question of how you should live. Just as there are liberal and conservative economists, there are economics makes people act or live a certain way of life, and in this, the liberals and the conservatives in the economists are together, because they both have too much confidence in economics, either too much confidence in Keynesian economics or too much in free market economics. I think both of them, both those kinds of economics, are much more open to chance and to crisis and volatility, such as we've seen, than economists like to think.
And the public obviously likes to think, too, because as you point out, an awful lot of faith there inspired an awful lot of people to make an awful lot of investments, whether it's in housing, whether it was in commodities or whatever it might have been, that turned out not to be true. That turned out to be, you know, you follow an economic model, and as you point out, it's as good as, you know, going down to your stockbroker and rolling the dice.
Well, yes, it often seems that way, and there is a kind of general dispute between stockbrokers and economists. Neither group cares much for the other group, and neither the stock pickers nor the economists got it right this time.
And how badly did they get it? I mean, is there a way where you can look at, say, a stockbroker or a stock picker and an economist and say that there's a lot of difference between the two in terms of their record?
I suppose there could be, and that might be an interesting study. I don't know the general answer to that.
You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, filling in for Kathleen Dunn today, and we're talking with Harvey Mansfield. He published an article earlier this week in the Weekly Standard, A Question for the Economists, Is the Overly Predicted Life Worth Living? And let's return to that question. We're going to be getting calls in just a moment here, but let's turn to that idea of an overly predicted life and whether it is worth living, Harvey Mansfield. Do you answer it, or do you merely ask the question?
Well, you know, that's a headline, and the author of an article usually doesn't write the headline.
Mm-hmm.
But, all right, I'll take responsibility for it. See, what you do when you try to live on the basis of predictions is that you overlook the need for virtue. This is the point which I make at the end of my article, that economics is a kind of substitute for virtue. Now, virtue would say you have a balance in your mind and an equanimity. You have an ability to be yourself and to do what you ought to do, whether the times are good or bad, like getting married, for better or for worse. And that's what virtue does. It doesn't depend so much on how things turn out, because if they turn out bad and you have virtue, you can take it. And if they turn out good and you have virtue, then you won't be corrupted by too much good luck. So I think an alternative to living by economic prediction is to have this, some kind of virtue, some kind of courage or moderation that will help you in good times and bad.
And by having that scientific model, or so-called scientific model, I guess, to fall back on, taking virtue out of the question, it sounds like it's easy for people like me, I suppose, to shift responsibility from ourselves to something else.
Well, that's true. You start looking for someone to blame, like economists, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But you fall into despair, or you become too optimistic, you kind of live a life which goes up and down according to the value of your portfolio. So that's not a good way to live, I think. And that essentially, I'm exaggerating and sort of generalizing a little here, that essentially is what economists advise people to do.
We're talking about economists and their role, or perhaps their lack of a role, in the current economic crisis with our guest this hour. Harvey Mansfield is a professor of government at Harvard University. He published an article earlier this week in the Weekly Standard posing a question for the economists, and we'll be talking about those questions with members of the group, members of our audience, in just a second here. 800-642-1234 is the number you can call if you would like to become part of the discussion. I'm Gene Purcell in for Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 22 minutes past 9 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell. I'm filling in this morning for Kathleen Dunn. Coming up after 10, we live in a world of unpredictability and change. And after 10, I'll be talking with the author of The Age of the Unthinkable, Why the New World Disorder Constantly Surprises Us and What We Can Do About It. That's up after 10 o'clock this morning here on the Ideas Network. This hour, Harvey Mansfield is our guest, a professor of government at Harvard University, and the author of an article published in the Weekly Standard this week, A Question for the Economists, Is the Overly Predicted Life Worth Living?, where we talk about the role of economists in the current financial crisis that is sweeping not only this country, but the world. Let's go out to some phone calls right now, and Don is with us from Evansville. Good morning, Don.
Good morning. First off, I really want to thank you for having somebody on who's rational, isn't screaming or yelling or blaming people. I think the blame game is really bad for everybody. Hitler used it to get into power. He blamed the Jews for the economic crisis in Weimar Germany. The thing that concerns me the most, Professor, is that CNBC, they have all these screamers on and who act like they have, you know, the Carnac the Great, they are all seeing and all knowing, and it doesn't help. But what I find really disturbing is when you have people of substance like the Nobel Prize winner, Paul Krugman, who won the Nobel Prize in economics, and he appeared on the Sunday, one of the Sunday morning talk shows, and he all but declared that Obama's plan is dead. I mean, the guy hasn't been in office for now like 80 days. Wouldn't it be better that instead of trying to yell fire in a crowded theater, that maybe we take a deep breath and I would just like your opinion on high profile people like. I'm sorry if I got his name wrong, but
Krugman.
Krugman, yeah.
Yeah.
I would like your opinion on that.
Don, thanks for the call. And, Professor, what about that? Do we need to take a deep breath?
Of course we need to take a deep breath. I'm glad that the caller saw that I wasn't really blaming economists. They're nice people. I know a lot of them, and certainly Paul Krugman is one of the best of them. I do think that they should take a reasoned look at their profession now. And by the way, the stock pickers are not such bad people either. They do scream. I think you're thinking of Jim Cramer, whom I also happen to know. Was a Harvard student some years ago. They give what they think is good advice, and it didn't turn out this time. And they take responsibility for their advice a little bit more than the economists do. So I think that's to be said in their favor.
What is it about an economist being an economist, their training or whatever it might be, that leads them to this point where they seem reluctant to sort of take a stand? I mean, they all go to school, they learn about economics, and yet at the end of it all, they're unwilling to say this is exactly what I think. I mean, it sounds as though it's part of the culture.
Well, it is part of the culture, and it's part of the scientific culture. They're scientists. So they consider themselves objective, and even though, as I say, some are liberal and some conservative, they consider themselves objective, and so an even tone, a tone of scientific prediction, that's the way they want to talk. They don't want to come across as screamers or as salesmen or as advocates. But in fact, I think quiet as they are, or may be, they have a grand effect.
Let's go back to calls right now, and Amos is with us from Sauk County. Good morning, Amos.
Good morning. Back in the 70s, I spent probably a couple of years of intensively reading economists, and I think you're excluding, first of all, I'm actually pretty conservative in a lot of ways, too.
Mm-hmm.
Radical in some ways and liberal in some ways, and I'm not a Marxist when it comes to envisioning a society, but I'll tell you, there's a huge amount of economists that have been around for 40 years that have been predicting this, that would consider themselves Marxist economists, and they're looking at the contradictions. You know, the issues of markets, natural resources, surplus of labor, imperialism. I mean, this was bread and butter for the average Marxist economist, and for me, it was a very, you know, I finally got fed up with reading economists because they were so. Most of them were just, you know, I think Joan Robinson said could analyze the cost of a cup of tea, but couldn't see the real world to save their lives. And there, you know, as far as a tool to analyze what's happening, there's, you know, there's thousands of Marxist economists that have predicted that this is an inevitable crisis in capitalism. And Paul Samuelson, that, you know, pretty much educated generations of people. In his textbook, he talks about a multiplier effect, and, you know, in one sentence or two sentences, I can't remember, he talks about, you know, he's a Keynesian economist, and he talks about how markets will increase and they'll multiply the value and all this, and then he says, well, of course, it can work the other way, and, you know, what you see when you get a depression is that it does work the other way, and then you have to analyze, well, you know, you look at history and you say, well, what comes after that, and it's generally our wars and a contraction of society, and so it's, I think it's just real inaccurate, and this is one of the problems that has been happening is there's been a marginalization of rational Marxist analysis of capitalism and the ultimate problems with it, and people are very unprepared to have a humane and rational way of trying to deal with the future, and it isn't, I mean, Marxism, the obvious problem was that it didn't really have a vision of the future. It was just a tool that pretended like it did and pretended like it was scientific in that realm. And, you know, you can't mix political economy and theory and all that stuff with economics and just throw them all together and say, well, I'm an economist, so I can accurately talk about these other things. So that's basically my comment. It is, you're leaving out an awful lot of very high-powered economists.
All right, yeah. In other words, there were a lot of Marxist enemies of capitalism who predicted that capitalism would come to a crash.
Well, yeah,
and what about that? Of course, yeah, at the end of what you were saying, you started to argue against yourself. Because actually the Marxist predictions were pretty awful themselves, weren't they?
Well, no. What I'm saying is that I have real problems with Mark when you say enemies of capitalism and all this. You know, there's a gradation of a lot of different, you know, some... you know, so out to lunch in terms of, and the problem with Marxism, in my opinion, is that there was no vision of, well, okay, you see the problem clearly, so how do you actually get a viable, I mean, you know, a dictatorship of the proletariat is a contradiction in terms, as far as I can see, in terms of reality, and how do you get a humane, functioning society? You know, that thing, you can't meld that into what I'm talking about, which is simply looking at an organism, an economic organism, which is capitalism, and saying, okay, here are the problems with it. And that has been clearly defined for about 100 years.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your remarks, but I don't think they go deep enough. Because what you're saying is that there is an economic answer to this. All we need is better economics. And maybe we should learn more from the Marxists than we thought we should. But I think there's a trouble or a difficulty in the very idea of an economics which tries to predict. And so it's not so much that this particular prediction went wrong and it can be cured by improving our science of economics. And the example I give in my article is the depression. And when that's been studied by economists, and they now think that, or have been saying for some time, that we won't have a depression again because we know what we did wrong and we won't make the same mistake again. And yet, people have been talking about a possible depression, including President Obama. So, in the present case. So I don't think that we've learned how to avoid depressions or crises. In fact, I think that Marx is wrong too. That crises are inevitable under a kind of market economy, and that there is no lasting economic solution which will get rid of them.
We're talking about the question for The Economist this hour. Our guest is Harvey Mansfield, a professor of government at Harvard University. We're talking about the role that economists have played, or perhaps not have played, in the current financial crisis that is taking over the country, taking over the world right now, and trying to figure out whether economists have played a role, whether they should be playing a role, and really what our role in all of this is as well. Now, Professor, one of the things you talked about is that whole idea of not being for the idea of an economics that tries to predict. At the same time, and we've been talking about this somewhat, it sort of tacitly predicts things, I guess, for people who are paying attention to the news or who are reading newspapers. What advice do you have for lay people who are trying to make sense of all this? I mean, what if an economist is not willing to take a stand and say, this is what I think, what's a lay person to do?
Well, you have to make your own judgment, and don't be too impressed either by economists or by market analysts or stock pickers. But on the other hand, it doesn't make sense simply to put all your money in a savings account either, because there are risks which should be taken, and it can be a kind of act of courage, especially in right now in these circumstances, to make an investment which may turn out very well when things get better. But to think that there is a sure analysis which will get you this is, I think, a delusion.
Let's go back to the phones right now, and Judy is with us from Milwaukee. Good morning, Judy.
Yes, thank you for having me on the air. I do have a question. Several years ago, I read an article about Nouriel Roubini, and then an economist, and then saw him several times being interviewed by Charlie Rose, and it seemed to me that, from my perspective, he had hit the nail on the head with the housing bubble and things like that, and so, of course, I took all of my money out of my stocks and put it into money market funds, and I'm the only one I know that doesn't have a 201k plan. Does one stick with that model now if one has found him to be sensible in the past? Would one continue to, or what should a layperson do?
That's the $64 question, isn't it, Professor?
Yes, it is, and I'm not about to answer it. I don't get paid for this, and I'm not going to claim to have the answers when economists who have studied the subject and market analysts who know much more about the market than I do are stumped. But I just say, watch out, and don't think that you have abolished chance. That science has gotten the answer and everybody can relax. So you do it according to your invest according to your own judgment, but be ready with some virtue in case you're wrong.
Yeah, and there is a case of somebody who's found somebody who was right at the they picked the right pony, so to speak.
Yes.
And now all of a sudden you're wondering whether it's still the right one. But it sounds like there's a consumer, there's a layperson who is trying to, you know, use that virtue you speak of and do some
homework.
That's
right. Yeah, and she went against the crowd, too, which is also to be honored and praised, I think.
We have an email from Anne from Menominee who writes that economics is not a science. It's a social science, which means that it tries to explain one part of a very complex real world. She goes on to say that economists don't predict, they forecast. The future is uncertain. Forecasts can be made only with a level of confidence less than 100%. Models are based on past evidence to the extent that the future is not the past. Their ability to forecast will be impaired. And I think that's what we've been talking about all along, that there is no certainty here.
That's right. And you can't predict the amount of certainty or uncertainty either. You can't say, I'm going to be right 80% of the time, because you don't know. And it didn't happen in this case. And besides, you can be right 80% of the time, and then that just builds up people's confidence for a real crash, in which when their confidence turns out to be overconfidence. So I don't think that the chanciness of life, and especially our complex modern economy, can be done away with.
And particularly the economy, you point out in your article that the economy is not under the control of an individual.
Yes.
I mean, because if it were, that person or people could fix it or not.
That's right. And you could fix responsibility on that. We like to give credit or blame to the president, but really it isn't the president who's responsible for the market. And it's perhaps a lucky thing that that's the case.
Let's go back to the phones right now. Mark is with us from De Pere. Good morning, Mark.
Hi.
Hi.
I was wondering if the guest would speak. Is speaking a lot about courage, but I think the virtue that we are looking for is prudence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a key virtue, is how can we be prudent about our investments and also about trust and who can we trust? Can we trust economists? And I guess we just look around and see who did better than other economists. And mm-hmm. Those would be the economists I want to listen to. You know, people like Robert Shiller, who was predicting this bubble, from Yale. You know that little institution down the road from Harvard?
That's right. I've heard of it.
Yeah. Well, he's been predicting this for years and warning people and he was the Jeremiah there with crying out, saying, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. Prepare yourself. What I get out of that is that's the man I want to listen to. It's prudent for me to listen to a man like that. What's the matter with thinking about not so much about courage, but about prudence being the basic virtue that we should use in our investments?
Certainly not. I'm not going to speak against prudence, but it still might be a question whether prudence says to be courageous and take a risk, or not, and not take a risk. So, and it doesn't work simply to tell people to keep their money in the bank, where it gradually loses value because of inflation. So I don't think that there's any general or easy answer to this. And maybe if you trust the person who has just been right the next time, you'll be wrong, and he'll be wrong, and so you have to steel yourself to this possibility.
And then there's also the temptation that if you do happen to be one of the folks who are riding high on the bubble at that given moment, and you hear somebody out there saying, it's not real, it's not going to last, it's all going to come crashing down. Do you stay or do you go? And that's where the whole idea,
right,
I think, of virtue comes in. How do you pick your path?
That's right. And somebody who's been saying the crash is going to come for some years was obviously wrong all the time that it didn't come.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't know when to listen to him in a case like that. It may be that he just likes to attract attention by calling a crash before it happens.
We're going to take a break right now, and when we return, we will continue our discussion about economists and the role that they have played, or perhaps not have played, in the current financial crisis that is working its way through the United States, working its way around the world. Our guest is Harvey Mansfield, a professor of government at Harvard University, and he wrote an article earlier this week that was published in the Weekly Standard posing some questions for economists. And we'll have some questions for our guest right after this break here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 18 minutes before 10 o'clock. I'm Gene Purcell. I'm filling in this morning for Kathleen Dunn. Coming up after 10, we'll be discussing the book The Age of the Unthinkable, Why the New World Disorder Constantly Surprises Us and What We Can Do About It. That's up after 10 o'clock. This hour, we're talking about the economy and more specifically the role that economists have played in the current fiscal crisis. Our guest this hour, Harvey Mansfield, is a professor of government at Harvard University, published an article earlier this week in the Weekly Standard. And one of the things he talks about is the idea that economists don't always seem to want to give advice, but in fact, that is exactly what they do. And perhaps we ought to take a step back and help chart our own destiny to a greater extent. Matt from Lake Geneva is with us right now, and good morning, Matt.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes, you know, back in the 70s when President Richard Nixon was imposing wage and price controls, his conservative base was disheartened, and, you know, he responded to them by saying, "We're all Keynesians now," which was kind of a signal that, you know, even conservatives were accepting the idea that Keynesian economics, an interventionist, you know, deeply interventionist model of economics would be and was the model of economics of the United States. And, you know, that role has been pretty much accepted and established since then. And I think it's created a kind of a fertile ground for Keynesianism and economists who want to come to the government and help the government with the interventionist kinds of policies, which is very seductive to economists. You know, that's where the grants are. That's where the prestigious positions are. You know, that's where the money is, basically. And so they've all bought into this idea that the government should be deeply, you know, intervening in the economy. And so they're blinded. You know, they can't see anything in this, anything that could come wrong from this, because they're so deeply, deeply invested in it. And the outliers, the people who don't subscribe fully to Keynesianism, they're marginalized. You know, they're the voices in the wilderness that you hear them. You know, we heard people all along, like the fellow was saying about Robert Shiller, but, you know, nobody really listens to him because there's this big school of thought saying, don't worry, everything's okay. The government knows what it's doing because they're getting our advice.
Matt, thanks for the call. And, Professor, what about that? Somebody like John Maynard Keynes, awful big influence.
Well, he certainly has. You might think it would be reduced by President Nixon's having adopted Keynesianism. but isn't the caller forgetting President Reagan and his faith in the free market? And hasn't the free market economics had a big resurgence of confidence and trust? I think of Milton Friedman and his popularity. His influence in the economics profession. So I don't think you can just blame liberal economists or Keynesian economists who want the government to intervene and more than it does, because the free market economists don't seem to have predicted the crisis any better. So I think both conservative and liberal economics have some questions to answer.
And how do you get around that whole overconfidence issue? Because it keeps sort of our conversation keeps sort of circling around back to that. Because
yeah.
Once you find something that works, you know, no matter yeah. what it might be, you tend to think, well, this is it, and I'm, you know, it's yeah. working. We're doing something right here. And how do you fight against that?
With common sense.
Now, that's a pretty tall order.
a certain moderation or prudence, as one of the callers said, I think is. And what common sense and prudence have in common is distrust in mathematics. I think that economics has gone wrong by giving itself over to econometrics or economics with equations based on mathematical models that are a good distance from practical reality. I think this is in good part responsible for the housing bubble and the bursting of the housing bubble, the creation of financial instruments that on the basis of using mathematical models, which made people think that they were secure. And when they were less secure, when made people think that they were spreading risk, when in fact they were increasing risk. So I think the more mathematical economists have more to answer for than the sturdy, more empirical, more practical types.
But you know, when you say words like virtue, prudence, practical. Those aren't real headline grabbers, you know. How do you get people's attention if you're trying to point them down a path and you're using words like that.
Well, you get their attention when a crisis comes like this.
Uh-huh.
And I know as a moral matter, maybe it's not good to kick somebody when he's down, but that's what I'm doing. I'm kicking the economists when they're down because I think that's when people will pay attention.
Let's see what Eric from Fond du Lac has to say. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. I guess, you know, part of what's going on right now is the fact that we've moved into a global economy as opposed to a national economy, and that's the relatively recent future that's happened, or recent past, and so it's going to take a little while for the economic models to catch up with what's going on. We're seeing all sorts of new things happen in the economy worldwide, and most of the models that are being used are still ones that are based off of an individual national economy. And so as things happening progress over the next 10 years, and there we'll have a better idea of what's going to happen in the future, because now we've seen it happen. You know, economics would be nice if it was a pure science, isn't it? It's something that, you know, you're making decisions based off of some models and some of what you've seen happen in the past. So until we work our way into this global economy further and have a better idea of what happens in Japan is how it's going to affect here in the United States and so on, I think it's going to be hard for economists to say this is it, this is what's going to happen, because you know, a couple little things here and there that change have a huge effect a couple months down the road.
But Eric, don't we fall back into that same trap at some point, that once we think we understand something, then we're going to be overconfident again?
Well, I, you know, and anybody who's coming out and saying this is what's going to happen next week, they're confident that this is the issue. They can't. There's no way they can be that positive, because it you know, economics and the science of it is constantly changing, and so you've got to bend with it. It's about half science and half art. By looking at what's happened in the past, you can try and figure out what's going to happen in the future, and you'll have a better idea than if you don't use the science at all. But yeah, you can't. Economics isn't something where you can go, okay, A, B, and C happen, so obviously D is going to happen next week, because any variation in A, B, or C is going to change what happens next week. You know, so I guess. Yeah, overconfidence is a problem, but you have to be able to look at the science and then kind of go with it.
Eric, thanks for the call. And Professor, what about that global economic aspect of things? Is it a case where maybe economists just aren't quite fully versed in all the intertwined aspects of the global economy?
Well, I certainly agree that the global economy is a very important factor in the crisis today. But I think that economists, by their nature, are very much involved in that, and even have led the way towards greater reliance on a global economy. I'm speaking right now from Germany, and there are banks over here that bought securities and bonds that are based on mortgages from some small town in the United States. So they didn't know what they were buying when they did that, and it was made possible for them to do this by models, mathematical models that were invented by economists. So I think economists have encouraged or internationalized the economy universalized it if they could, and that this is part of the problem.
Sesh is with us now from Fond du Lac. Good morning, Sesh.
Good morning. I hope you can
hear me. Oh, I'm sorry. You've got what I would say is a terrible phone line, so I'm afraid we're going to...
I am driving in the Fond du Lac area, so if it's really bad, then maybe I'll just not go on the air.
Well, give it a shot.
Okay. Yeah, I was basically pretty much having the same observation, the fact that economics is definitely not science, essentially because there's no such thing as controlled experiments and reproducibility. So by the very token, it's not a science. It's basically using mathematical models to possibly explain. That's one of the reasons why economists do not say that or agree that they kind of are right and they're predicting something. They're trying to predict something. So I think we, as a whole, have basically graduated to taking their predictions at face value and giving it more value than it needs to really be paid attention to, because there is nothing available as an alternative that will give us a better prediction. It's like saying that Unani is a better medication system than the modern medical system. At the time, Unani was the only thing available to certain people. So that's what happens.
All right, Sesh, and we're going to have to let you go. That the phone line is a little bit problematic. And Harvey Mansfield, I don't know whether you got any of that. But he was discussing the whole idea of economics not being an exact science, but in some cases, it's all we got.
Well, I don't think it is all we got, because we do have common sense and prudence. There are non-scientific or at least less scientific ways of understanding things. What the caller was suggesting really is that all social science is dubious because it doesn't have controlled laboratory experiments. Well, I think probably the social scientists or the economists would say that, well, we have techniques for reproducing results that are like laboratory experiments. But I kind of agree that they probably don't, and that social science as a whole is a dubious thing when it claims to have the exactness and the universality of science. But it likes to claim that because that has a certain prestige, and people listen. If you just say you're speaking on the basis of prudence and common sense, then you don't get a PhD for knowing that, and people won't regard you as an expert. What we've seen in America and in the world since the 1930s, or since the invention of Keynesianism, is a great increase in the prestige and you could even say the power of the economics profession. Everybody listens to them because everybody wants to know how to get more money than you've already got, or how to save what you've got, and so they do this because they have a science and other people do not, and they have a PhD and in economics, and I, for example, do not.
And there is the feeling I think a lot of people have that, as you say, the economists have accumulated a certain reputation in the last 50 years, 60 years, 70 years, whatever it might be, and a feeling that if they say it, if they press a button, that there is going to be an effect that they can predict that comes out on the other end.
Yes, I'm sorry, I'm beginning to lose the sound here.
Okay, well, let me go up to, as we get towards the top of the hour, I'm going to ask. You've had the opportunity now that the article's been out for a couple of days. What sorts of reactions have you gotten to it from your friends who are economists, from people in general? But I'd be particularly interested in economists who are reacting to what you're saying.
Well, so would I, but I haven't heard from them. I didn't hear from any this last hour either. I'm still waiting for a response from economists. To respond to me, they would have to some extent come off their high horse and talk to somebody who doesn't have very much mathematics, that's me, and who doesn't know much economics, and try to explain why they went wrong and why we should continue to have trust in them.
Do you think it's really a case that they are on a high horse? That's why they're not, that we're not hearing a hue and a cry from economists?
Yes, I think that they have too much confidence in the science of economics. That's what I mean by being on a high horse. I don't mean that they're stuck up and conceited as personal human beings, no.
Sure. And finally, we've only got about maybe 45 seconds or so, final word of advice to the lay people in our audience as they try to navigate their way through some very difficult financial times, some very difficult economic times.
Well, the two great virtues are courage and moderation, together with prudence. You know, it'll take a little bit of courage to invest your money, but I think maybe now is a good time. I'm not saying that with the backing of a PhD in economics, but I'm just saying that. And moderation means it's also a good time to spend. I mean, to save, because you may lose your job and you may need the money.
Well, Harvey Mansfield, thanks so much for taking the time out of your trip to join us today.
Thank you.
Harvey Mansfield has been with us, a professor of government at Harvard University, and earlier this week published an article in the Weekly Standard, A Question for the Economists, Is the Overly Predicted Life Worth Living? And you, of course, can find a copy of that article online if you'd like. If you'd like a copy of this program, you can find it online as well at WPR.org. Rhonda Fanning produced this hour and provided us with on-air production as well. I'm Gene Purcell in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.